talking pigskin on NFL. Cause football is really swell. NFL's great and there is no debate. He's gonna talk right now.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Damashek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to episode number 92 of the Dave Damashek football program. Available as always on iTunes and at NFL.com/Shek, S-H-E-K. Let's get right to it. And another exciting week of pro football and beyond to discuss with the man seated to my immediate right. You know him from NFL.com and the NFL Network, and you can track him down on Twitter at Adam Rank. It's Adam Rank. What's the poop, fella?
Hey, boss. Thanks for having me.
Sure. It's a pleasure to see you again. Listen, we have a lot to kibitz about here, but let's say hello to the big superstars here of the podcasting world at the NFL, apparently. They started out as, you know, just little, they were supporting, they played a supporting role. They came along, threw them a bone, I thought, you know, guys, they want their voices to be heard.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they're doing their own podcast. I don't know what to make about this. Here they are.
It's the
Benedict and Arnold, a.k.a. from around the league, Dan Hanzus and Mr. Fancy Pants, Mark Sessler. How are we, fellas?
I'm a little upset, to be honest with you. I feel like we're going in an ugly direction right
off the
bat.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I think the ugly direction has already been taken by the two of you. If you're not familiar, go to NFL.com. The Around the League boys, they're always writing about all things NFL with a touch of mirth, as I've always said. But I'll tell you one thing that is not funny is taking the platform we've given you and then spinning it off into your own deal and leaving us in the dust. I think it was a big move on our part, in fact, to even allow you back into Studio 66 after the betrayal. Do you wish to address this?
Mark, go ahead. Start it up.
Well, listen, I mean, I think if
Oh, wait, I have to start one thing up. First of all, taste the blaster, jerks! And another! That's for the butt. Don't laugh or you'll get another one. Now, please proceed, Fancy Pants.
Oh, listen, I mean, I think that we viewed it as really something where we're honoring kind of the path that you set us on.
Don't patronize
me. I know,
boy.
That sounds ridiculous.
Well,
Blown off by better people than you.
Listen, I mean, it didn't factor in as some sort of revenge trip. You know, we just thought it would be fun to take some of what we talk about here and continue that.
First of
on
all,
a second show, right?
First of all, it's the ATL Debate Club every Friday.
It's a darling name.
Oh. I also nice that you're going to get a plug in for it.
It's well, if you're going to savage us, might as well get it in.
Good and job, Dan.
To act like you know it's betrayal is just silly because, first of all, we love coming on the show.
Yeah,
and we're
of course,
here
because you're getting free publicity for your ATL Debate Club available on iTunes. I'm assuming, right?
No, see, we're not big time. We're a grassroots organization over here in the Debate Club land. It's just an ATL post that has an embedded 10-minute clip of maybe three topics leading into the upcoming week.
All right, so we have a lot to talk about.
I'm a big fan of the ATL Debate Club, by the way.
What?
It's nice,
hey, listen.
And it's tight, just how I like it. 10 minutes is all you need.
Yeah, well, who's your producer on that?
It's undetermined, right? Do we have a...
Yeah, we're very happy with the man who stepped in last week, but we've got a fan right here, and you know we do. We keep
who,
it
who
10
stepped
minutes.
In?
We'd love to make a trade.
Yeah, I was going
to
say
we'll give you a black tie for future considerations.
Well, we had Wilk tie last week, but
No, no, no. We'll make that move.
All right. So listen, there's much to discuss, a lot to get to
we'll
from
be like
week
the Red Sox.
Two. We'll get to all that in a second. I am back from Buffalo. I encourage you to go to NFL.com and look up my latest journey on the NFL Fans Ultimate Road Trip presented by Cars.com. I had a gay old time flying off over the weekend to Buffalo, New York. And let me just say this, football fans across the land, those Bills fans lay down the gauntlet when it comes to having a good time. I get there, I'm pulling up to the stadium, and it's it's early in the morning, 9 a.m. call time. I get out to the stadium. And the RVs are lined up as far as the eye can see to fill the parking lots. I went over there later in the day. Tailgating has been taken to a new level in general, wherever you go. Everybody now has the flat screen set up. It's a grand time we're living in that you can bring a flat screen out in the grass and watch that while you're waiting for another game to start. and all that sort of thing. And the meats and everything, people have taken cooking to a new level and so on. All manner of tubed meats. And so it was great. And by the way, as I'm walking through the Bills tailgating, you see all the navy blue jerseys that they wore until last season, those horrible, horrible jerseys. The navy with the royal blue and the red, and they looked like a Montreal Alouettes game that you might have seen Dieter Brock playing against them in a generation ago. Dieter Brock time. Point for Damashek. I got the Dieter Brock. Look at the stink eye Rank's giving me. He doesn't like that. I worked that one in there.
He looks stunned.
Now it seems like it's pre-planned.
It wasn't pre-planned. I honestly just came up with
the monologue of this.
The Dieter Brock. No, what I wanted to say is, though, so all this great tailgating and delightful people. Apparently it's the city of the good neighbor or good neighbors or whatever it's called, I believe. And they live up to it because everybody, and it's not because I'm there with a camera, everybody says, hey, you want some food? Have some food. Have a beer. Have whatever you want. They are such delightful people across the board. But the most important takeaway is the scene I've just described to you was on Saturday. It wasn't game day yet.
That's great.
The game didn't kick off for another 28, 29 hours, and these people are lining up in their RVs to start tailgating on Saturday. Point is, it was grand. Check out my interviews with Stephon Gilmore and others from the Bills. It was a wonderful time. Then Sunday rolled around, and I was looking at, obviously, all the big games, and we don't want to talk about Peyton Manning's performance on Monday night in just a second here. But first, Dan Hanzus, I did take in a game played on the banks of the Three Rivers. Mm. Big one. Mark Sanchez, Tim Tebow, and company went into a desperate Pittsburgh team, as desperate as a game could possibly be for a Week 2 matchup. Steelers needed that one. They escape. What do you make about all this Sanchez? Now, Tebow has one good play, and that's enough to apparently create a firestorm of talk in New York that Tebow needs more time on the field.
Right, yeah. I mean, I thought we were going to be in a good spot after Week 1 where Sanchez would have some
time. And Hanzus is the Jets fan, just to point that out.
Sadly, yes, and tragically. But I thought Sanchez was going to have some breathing room after a great Week 1. That quickly seems to have dissipated after the performance on Sunday. He didn't play well at all in the second half. And you give a lot of credit to Pittsburgh that really clamped down on the Jets' receivers and press coverage. They really beat him up. But, you know, Sanchez doesn't play well. Tebow only plays three snaps, but one of them was, I believe, a 22-yard run. And now, once again, this narrative is loosely in place to, you know, wreak havoc on their season next week.
I was talking with colleague from NFL Fantasy Live, Jason Smith, who is also a Jets guy, and he said it's an interesting hypothesis that after Lawrence Timmons bonked Sanchez on the head, that it was a different game after that. It was a different Sanchez after that. Sessler, do you buy that maybe he was dinged up a little bit? Is that why? I mean, because Sanchez looked like Mark Sanchez for the rest of the game. He was atrocious. He said, how you could be excited about this team if you're a Jets fan? And Tebow might be a short-term panacea, but there's no way if you put him in there as the starter that suddenly they would get on a huge roll and be a threat to the Patriots. As shaky as they are, by the way, too, with that offensive line. Willie McGinnis said that was going to be a real problem for him. Tom Brady, you get pressure on him, he's going to be in a lot of trouble. Anyway, what do you think about that? Is there anything to that maybe Sanchez wasn't right in the brain after that?
Well, speculation. I think Sanchez, what is right about Sanchez, we know it's right when he's inconsistent week to week. I mean, he's that kind of player. He's going to go out and do what he did week one. We're all thinking one thing about the Jets. He did what he did against Pittsburgh, which I don't think was a great surprise that he came back to earth. We're looking at a different Jets team. I mean, I think the thing that's good is that Rex Ryan isn't the guy leading this charge about Tebow going to come in. And the Jets, as an organization, I think, strip away the hype, have kept kind of a beeline about this Tebow thing. Sanchez is the starting quarterback. They got to just stick with him and see what happens. It's that defense that's going to get them to the playoffs if they get there.
And they didn't have Revis. That's a big loss, but
Huge. Obviously
that's a wash when you say Polamalu and Harrison. And in fact, that probably, if you really are measuring, it's probably the Jets win that, the injury battle.
And what's really maddening about Sanchez also is that he was shredding that Steelers secondary in the first quarter. And then it just disappeared. And maybe that was game plan changing by Tomlin, and he deserves credit for that. But it's not like Sanchez went in there and was completely lost for four quarters. He looked like the same guy that was killing the Bills the week before. And then by the time, you know, halftime rolled around, he just, they were nothing. And so maybe it did have something to do with him getting hit on the head, because his numbers after that were not good.
Well, we're validated, Rank, because we said about the Jets that the real problem, whoever the quarterback is, as much as we diminish Sanchez and Tebow, we also said that, they, to be fair, they don't have anybody to catch the ball besides Santonio Holmes, who was dropping the ball quite a bit on Sunday. But after that, Stephen Hill comes back down to earth. What about, though, speaking of validation, we've talked for the last year plus about Peyton Manning and the mystery of the inability, the collective inability for anybody to ever put him down who's ever been around Peyton Manning, but he was just plumb lousy, sailing passes. And I said this a week ago, too. The sideline routes, he just doesn't have zip on that ball, and of course he ends up beating the Steelers, but didn't look good on Monday night. How say you about that performance, and what do you think about who's going to even win that division at this point? Is it the Chargers, or think you still like the Bronx?
No. I was big on the Chiefs when the season started, and now that's not looking very good. The Chiefs still have a lot of talent, both sides of the football, and you would hope that they're going to put it together.
Well, they better not lose to the Saints, and they're going to lose to the Saints. So
it's so tough to, I mean, they get in an 0-3 hole. I don't see them climbing out of it, because the Chargers have the Falcons this week. The Chargers will win that game. They'll go to 3-0. And now they look like the team that's going to control that division. Peyton Manning, and it goes back to being on the fantasy show and thinking so much about fantasy football. Everybody was so quick to just say, oh, yeah, Peyton's back. He had one great game. He looked pretty good against the Steelers. We're forgetting Tim Tebow also looked good against the Steelers last year in a similar circumstance. And so everybody was just quick to just say, you know what? Peyton Manning's fine. That whole neck thing, missing an entire season, no big deal. He's Peyton Manning again. And then last night we're like, oh, yeah, there was a guy who missed a full year who had four neck surgeries. And it goes, and I never really wavered on the Broncos. I never was quick to say that they were going to be back, but I was surprised that Peyton Manning looked as bad as he did.
Name drop theater. On Monday night, I sat in the fancy talent green room, a misnomer when Damashek walks in there and is allowed to stay in there. I go in there, though. How cool. I don't care if this makes me a nerd for enjoying this. I think it's fun. I go in, and it's Brian Billick. And it is Darren Sharper, and it's Heath Evans talking ball, you know, that, and watching that game. So it's fun to sit in there and listen to them, and Peyton Manning looking lousy through that first quarter, and they all agree. Oh yeah, Peyton Manning can be had. Yeah, Mike Smith has his number. He knows how to trip Peyton Manning up. Well, if that's the thing that Peyton Manning has on everybody, is that he's such a genius. How he can calculate and manipulate the defense. If defenses can figure out how to do that, then what is Peyton Manning's virtue? It's very murky to me why he is this Teflon quarterback who, for all of his misdeeds, shame the devil if you say anything bad about him.
Did they go out on the air and say this stuff?
I don't know. I didn't catch their program
because
in the
it seems like nobody will come on and say things like, "Oh, Peyton Manning can be." Everybody's like, "Hey, greatest quarterback ever," and they say, you know, they roll out the hyperbole about him, but nobody ever says things like, oh yeah, you can beat this guy.
So it's interesting. And now the next thing I want to talk about is the big story of the weekend. The one other big story is the Greg Schiano, Tom Coughlin kerfuffle, while everybody was looking at the 49ers and Lions game, which reminds me to mention that we have Patrick Willis coming up in just one second here, that mighty defense, maybe even shaping up to be one of the great defenses of all time. But of course they're going to need to go deep into the playoffs again this year, but really shaping up to just be a shutdown no matter who they're playing. They really dominate kind of defense. But while everybody was waiting to see what the handshake would look like between those two guys, all of a sudden we have this nonsense going on the field after the game. And I talk about it. New shame report, by the way, up there for you on NFL.com. Be on the lookout for that one where I share my thoughts. I was cool with Schiano doing what he did there just because, that's not the tradition. You know, the Giants didn't see it coming. They were going half speed. Well, then don't go half speed. The game still counts, right? This isn't like a couple of hackers out on the golf course. That putt's good. Take that putt. Still a game. It counts, right? If you force the fumble, it's the element of surprise. Well, I don't remember anybody crying about Dan Marino dishonoring the sport or being dirty because he fake spiked the ball. Yeah, but he went up to the line. line, and the receivers were acting like they were just going to go through the motions, and then all of a sudden he threw it to the end zone. That wasn't fair.
People did bellyache about that, but it's also the Patriots. Should they be, you know, ripped for going after Ryan Williams when the Cardinals? Hey, the Cardinals were just trying to run out the clock. You know, they wanted to get out of New England with a win. How dare they try to strip the ball from him?
Fancy pants Sessler, how say you?
Well, I mean, the game was still in question. I mean, I agree with you 100%. I don't understand the uproar in the sense that had they were been down by 21 points,
yes,
you know,
agree.
Okay, then exactly. It's like, it's a bit much to
making
jump
a philosophical
there.
Statement. I agree right. with you, but this is a practical measure to try and get the ball and maybe try and steal a game.
I don't have any problem with what he did, and I think that, you know, Coughlin overreacted. Completely.
Coughlin's got to understand that was a Jersey move by Schiano. That's what a New Jersey guy does.
Right, right.
And he, you know, right. you're going to go for that ball, and if you're going to, you know, knock somebody out or hurt someone in the process, you know, Schiano, he should never be. Why is he even in Tampa Bay? Schiano is a Jersey dude. He should be replacing Coughlin one day. Coughlin should understand that one day Greg is going to take his job.
Well, I'm mystified by that old school. This isn't baseball where you're allowed to, if you're, I remember when Carlton Fisk yelled at a guy for not running out a ground ball or didn't run to first base after getting walked. And that's acceptable in baseball, the code and all that jazz. In football, they're playing, like I say, I don't understand the, that's, you know, that's Bush League. And that's what Brian Billick said. I said, what'd you make out of that? And I said to his face, I said, I disagree with you. I think you're and then he took a swing at me.
And then,
but I was able to
find a lot about him on the show.
I know. Yeah. I was able to duck under it, though. What ended up happening was I ducked under it, and Lindsey Rhodes walked up right behind me as I ducked under it. Billick popped Lindsey Rhodes by accident, and I'm like, now you've really opened a can of worms, Coach Billick. I don't want anything. And I walked out of there, and he said, get back here. And I said, ah, and I slammed the door behind me. That was it. Okay, fellas, before we get to Patrick Willis here, real quick.
Can I say something real quick?
Yes, you may, Black Tie. Yes. Please. We always enjoy hearing your voice.
People have pet peeves like soccer, like, hey, why doesn't anyone know how much time is left and whatnot? The whole kneeling down thing is my pet peeve about football. I hate it when a team, like, no more timeouts, you're down, and the other team can just kneel the ball out. There's 0% chance, in all likelihood, that you can get a chance to win the game.
Well, you said 0% in all likelihood, those don't go together.
I just dislike the fact that the team that's down, in all likelihood, has no chance of winning the game. I dislike that.
First of all, I've said it before. I think my favorite thing is when you're in a position of advantage, if you're rooting for a team, the victory formation is 1A to the coolest thing. I think in the most fans' mind's eye, the thing that they most want to see is their team score a touchdown as time expires to win the big game. I prefer, if I get to pick the way it happens, I like the victory formation in a tight game. Like, they did it. They made it. They're going to do it. And one snap where your guy has to take the knee one time. I think that is more exciting to me. I enjoy that more. The best one, though, of all is being up one goal in hockey and hitting the empty net with about 30 seconds to go so that the party can begin. But, yeah, I don't exactly understand where you're going with that, Black Tie.
I'm just saying it should be an opportunity for the other team to.
Well, here's
get
the
back
point.
The
here's
game.
The point.
For example,
if the center QB exchange goes wrong and the defense recovers it, then the defense gets the ball. Ergo, why wouldn't Schiano try and force that to happen a little bit more quickly and try and take control of that, especially when he knows that the element of surprise allows that to be a possibility? The idea that can he do that going forward, it's probably not going to work ever again. I mean, this was the one shot he had at it, because now everybody who ever plays the Bucs, and in fact, in general in the NFL, probably in the short term, is going to say, hey, be mindful, the defense might go after you, and they're gonna go full speed from this point forward.
I guess I'm just saying I disagree with the common practice of kneeling down. Like, I agree with what Schiano was trying to do. Like, you should have a chance in it some way to get the ball back and, you know.
Thanks for weighing in to make that a 5-0 sweep. I thought he was going to weigh in with, like, a voice of dissent or something.
No, I'm against the whole kneeling down process. That's what I'm trying to say. There should be a rule change as, you know, just like if you're down 8 points in basketball, it's a far-fetched idea, but Reggie Miller, you see what he did.
There's still a 24-second clock.
I think Black Tie's had too many frustrating losses in Madden football.
Black Tie, here's what
that
I want to know. Black Tie, here's what I want to know from you. Last week, a bit of a firestorm of activity created by you at the start of episode number 91 derailing our conversation to tip your hat to give a shout out to bathroom attendants.
Yep, you know what though, I like you
shouting out to the working man. Go ahead. You're right. Your point is that we should always remember that people are doing hard jobs, doing tough jobs. Do you have a shout out you'd like to give today?
I do. I have one. Love to give a shout out to toll attendants. You know, on a toll road, like on a highway.
Oh, I thought you meant podiatrists.
No, yeah, exactly.
No, toll attendants. Especially, like, you know, the Cross State.
Tow truck drivers, you mean?
No, no. Just, you know, toll
attendants. Toll collector.
Yeah, toll collector.
Oh, toll. I see. So, yeah, that would be a I agree. That would be a miserable job.
An awful job. It was a Christmas. I was going from Milwaukee to Chicago, and it's in winter. It's cold. Uh-huh. And you have, in the middle of nowhere, this one guy just chilling, just waiting to, you know, collect your 50 cents. Like, that has to be an awful job. You're in the middle of nowhere, no communication, I assume, with nobody else, and it's cold. Shout out to those guys.
I hear you. I agree. But you know what? I do want to go back to the bathroom attendant thing. It is weird that, afterwards I was thinking about it. The guy, if somebody is in there and they're handing out candies, or they, you know how they do, they put on the towel, the bathroom attendant, give them a buck after you come out of the toilet. They put a towel down, and then they put their candies down and gum. And sometimes they take the gum out of the wrapper for you. So, I mean, not out of the wrapper, but out of the pack. Right. So it's just individual wrap pieces, which I always, you know, look at and think, you know, that's, you know, a strange thing to do. I didn't ask for, I didn't have an expectation of candy being made available to me in the public bathroom. The weirdest people are the ones who actually take them up on the offer and eat the candy. That's toilet candy. How desperate are you for a piece of toilet candy that you'll consume that? I find that nauseating.
Is it wrapped or unwrapped?
Well, either way, I don't want it. Listen.
What if it's wrapped?
It's in a toilet. It's in a public can. What do I want? What am I? I'm not going to go anywhere near food. Someone's moving their bowels four feet from me. I want a piece of candy bad?
So if you're in a restroom at a restaurant, and you're wearing a shirt, when you go down and you go into the restroom, when you come out and sit down and go eat your steak dinner, your shirt was just in the bathroom. Somebody was just moving their bowels 4 feet, and you're wearing that shirt. Well, how do you contend with that?
I don't want to talk too much about it, but of course I would never do that in a space if I could possibly avoid it. I don't get up from a meal. It's not a common habit of me. It's not a common habit of mine. Excuse me for a minute. You know what? I mean, listen. Try to.
You're still in the restroom.
All right. Enough about that. Listen, first of all, it's a stranger versus myself. That's a major distinction, I think. I don't think one we can gloss over.
Can I just say something?
Yes, you may.
My favorite part of the podcast now is officially Black Tie's Tales of Working Class Woe. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a Bruce Springsteen song being woven behind the glass.
All right, hang in real quick here, fellas. I do kind of like it. I'm in favor of it, Black Tie. Some people, specifically those who follow @FireBlackTie.
By the way, somebody in this room follows this.
I know. I've got to start following, too, just to keep it alive.
I don't want to call out who it is.
I enjoy it. But real quick, fellas, hang in here for 1 second here, because we're going to get to Patrick Willis here of the San Francisco 49ers. Like I say, that defense really looks dandy there. And I'll ask you, though, have the Niners emerged now? We've seen some flaws in the Packers, maybe exposed by that Niners defense. What do we think? Are the Niners now the team to beat? I start with you, Fancy Pants Sessler.
Well, I picked them as my NFC Super Bowl team. And the other team I picked from the AFC was the Patriots. I'm going Niners all the way. I mean, they are the class of the NFC.
Hanzoos.
I like the Niners as the favorite, but I think the Falcons have now also emerged as 1A. I'd love to see those two teams play in the NFC Championship game. Two different styles, but both very strong.
I find it hard to imagine. I mean, listen, they always say it, but really, a very long way to go, and people make a mistake every year of reading too much into what we see very early on in the proceedings. But if the Falcons had to go to San Francisco, I wouldn't like that for them. I think that'd be a tough one for them.
I wouldn't want to see Matt Ryan in the playoffs in San Francisco in that weather. Yeah. No way.
You think the Niners are going to the Super Bowl?
Right now, yeah, absolutely.
Their schedule, you start looking at it, I mean, you know, they should really, they should be at worst 5-0 when the Giants get to town. They should really do it, and they have the Vikings coming up here.
If they can get by the Birds, that's the one, that's the tough team for them.
What Birds?
Cardinals.
Oh, I didn't know which of the many birds you were discussing.
The 2-0 Cardinals. Yeah.
Kevin Cobb. I can't trust that Kevin Cobb because there's no good reason that that L is silent in his last name. He's trying to hide something. All right, let's get to Patrick Willis right now. All right, Rank, here he is, one of the great defenders in all the NFL. Maybe the linchpin. Maybe I'll even ask him that if he considers himself to be the linchpin of that dominant San Francisco 49er defense, fresh off a victory against the Detroit Lions. It's Patrick Willis. How are you, Patrick?
I'm doing well, sir. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing well, and congratulations to you on being 2-0. When the schedule opened up, you guys must have said, "My goodness, the NFL's doing us no favors right out of the gate at Lambeau, then coming back with the Lions coming in here." But now you sit at 2-0. What is that? We were talking just before we got on here with you about the effect that Jim Harbaugh has had. Because from the outside looking in, it looks like, you know, you guys are a talented but middling bunch, and then all of a sudden Harbaugh comes in, and overnight you're a dominant team. How much is that the fact, or what other factors are there that are contributing to what you guys are doing the last season plus two games?
Yeah, I just think, you know, Coach Harbaugh coming in, I think we already had a good nucleus of guys here that that wanted to win, that wanted to be a championship team, and I think him coming in with the coaching staff that he brought in with him, I think they came in with the right mindset, and we just clicked. I mean, it was just the right fit. You know, my hand goes up to the organization, I like to call them the upstairs guys, to Jed, the owners, I mean, just everybody making it possible to get Coach Harbaugh here, and then him just putting together a great coaching staff as he did. I mean, I think it was just the right fit for all of us.
And he's coming from the college ranks. He was at Stanford. A lot of times college coaches come up and they don't do very well in the NFL. I'm thinking guys like Nick Saban, Bobby Petrino. What is it that makes Harbaugh so successful? Because it's obvious you guys bought in immediately.
Really, I think a lot of it had to do with just his he cares, man. I mean, he cares for us as players, and he shows it. You know, he tells us all the time, you know, we're gonna go out and we're gonna work, and he don't just ask us to go out there and work and work and work and don't do anything for us. I mean, whether he gives us, you know, a 30 minutes extra to sleep in or take off 10 minutes of a meeting. I mean, to that, we see that, and to us, you know, that means a lot to us. Foremost, he's a guy who's been there and done that. He played in the league for a while, for a long time, and he knows what it's about. So he gets us as players, and he understands us, and we understand him, and that's most important.
Is he a fun guy, though? Because I can't get a read on him. Sometimes he seems like he may be a bit of a wiseacre, but then on the other hand, he does seem pretty hardcore guy.
He is, man. He has a sense of humor like no other. I mean, Coach Harbaugh, I mean, he always gonna have a story for us, and he always keeps us on edge with a good story. I mean, a lot of times he tells us a story. I don't know if it's real or if it's fake, but it sounds good, and he gets me every time. But he's a serious coach, but at the same time too, he has a sense of humor too. You know, he's a coach that, you know, when it's time to work, it's time to work. When it's time to, like, you know, kid around or whatnot, he likes to do that too. So, and that's what makes it fun. When you're working, we out there, we getting it done, we grinding. But then, you know, when we're not out there on the field, and somebody want to crack a joke or you want to ask him a question or whatnot, I mean, he's a down to earth coach, and he'll crack a joke with you or he'll talk with you or just whatever, man. He's just an overall good guy. Like I said, we're just very blessed to have him as our head coach.
Yeah, but all right. I would have liked on Sunday night, I told Nate Burleson if the Lions won, I wanted Schwartz to go over to Harbaugh and give him the gimme five on the side, down low, too slow bit. But it didn't happen. They had their nice handshake. So now you guys beat the NFC North Packers, NFC North Lions, and then in a weird scheduling quirk, now you have the NFC North Vikings. It'd be very easy for you to tell us why the Niners should beat the Vikings. I think everybody anticipates that. Tell me why the Vikings have a shot to beat you guys on Sunday.
You know, it's any given Sunday. I think every team we play, Every team we play has a shot at either win or you can lose. Somebody has to win, somebody has to lose. I guess there can be a tie, but, you know, we don't ever bank on those. But somebody got to win, somebody got, has to lose. And for us, you know, we're just all about going in, like coming in next week or this week and putting in the work, earn the right to go out there on Sundays and be victory, be victorious. And that's our mindset. You know, we first got to put it out there on the field, and then on Sunday we go out there and we play, and we just see where the chips lay at the end.
Well, but you know, the one guy who is likely, based on the recent history of the San Francisco 49ers defense, who is probably not going to beat you is Adrian Peterson. You guys have some knack of shutting down running backs. What is the main factor, would you say, in the Niners' ability to shut down running backs? Especially, I mean, they just almost never get in the end zone on you guys.
Really, I mean, we just have a bunch of guys who like to get after the ball carrier. We have a bunch of guys who love just playing defense, and most important, we have a bunch of guys who are just unselfish guys who do what we ask to do. We do our job, and we try to do our job and a little bit more, but we don't ever try to get out of the scheme of the defense. We understand what makes us run and what makes us be the type of defense we are, and we just try to stick with that and do those things.
Yeah, but listen, Patrick, I've always enjoyed talking to you, but, you know, I got Peterson on my fantasy team. Is there any way you guys can be cool and, like, let's say you're beating him up a little bit, can you let him get one for me just to be, you know, just to be cool or whatever?
No, I don't think we can do that.
Well, you tried, man.
I tried. I couldn't live with myself if I didn't ask.
You made every effort there. All right, Patrick, you're with us today to talk about a noble cause that you're supporting.
But what I'm excited about, though, is Duracell. I mean, that's the main focus today. And you know, they're a proud sponsor of the NFL now, energy-wise. And, you know, it's a blessing to be a part of their team. And, you know, and the biggest thing we're just doing right now is all the money that we raise, you know, when you go to Facebook, Duracell Facebook, or tweet hashtag, you tweet using Trust Your Power hashtag, $1 goes to youth sports. So, now just giving back a little bit and hoping that, you know, that money helps a kid that really wants to go out there and pursue their dream, helping it come true, helping it step closer.
Well, good stuff, and you're a good guy, and obviously a good cause there. And big fans of Duracell over here in Studio 66, right, Rank?
We certainly are.
Yes. Before we let Patrick go.
We got to get one prediction now. You listen to everybody talking. I'm going to go ahead and already put you guys in the Super Bowl. Who do you want to play in the Super Bowl, Patrick? Give us who do you want to face? I see you guys playing the Patriots.
Oh, you're assuming they're going.
They're in.
Oh, they're already in the Super Bowl.
I've already decreed it. All right. Who do you want to play?
No, honestly, man, I mean, that I'm not even thinking about that right now. We're just thinking about Minnesota, and that's our next game, and that's our next focus.
All right, very good. Patrick Willis, on behalf of Duracell, coming to us. Thanks for the time, man, and good luck against those Vikes, who surely will be spirited this Sunday.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, all the best.
You're listening to Dave Demichek.
I don't know if it was his call or his family's call or whoever decided. Good thing he's Patrick and not Pat. If he were Pat Willis, it wouldn't work as well, you know? They gave a little back in his Georgetown days. They thought about calling. There was a little Pat Ewing going on.
Oh, there was right? Too much Pat.
That was weird.
Yeah, but then he became Patrick, and that was the right
whatever
decision.
Whatever happened
there,
to Michael
too.
Graham?
Oh, yeah, the bald guy?
God, that guy was so good.
He was terrific in – well, no one remembers that. That was a long time ago. Even the two guys sitting in front of us are too young to remember Michael Graham. He was a great forward on that one
the
team
one
to
Georgetown
beat Fly Slam
won,
a Jamma
yeah.
in 84. But, again – no one knows who that is besides you and me here, Rank. Let's wrap it up by honoring the player who wore it best. We do it on every episode. We're coming down to the last numbers here, Rank. We're in the 90s now. Number 92, we honor the player who wore the episode number best. Got to be Reggie White, right? I'll say Rick Tocchet in his Pittsburgh Penguin days, an important second-line winger there. Nice grit and muck that he brought to the second Stanley Cup in Pittsburgh, but
Strahan.
Doesn't compare to Reggie White,
yeah.
Who's Strahan.
Strahan wore 92.
Kelly Ripa's new pal.
Yep.
getting rave reviews. A lot of women have been telling me, I don't know who the new guy is. You know, he played football, I think, or something. Yeah, he played some football, and I love him. A lot women love this guy.
What is Tiki Barber's reaction on his couch?
I hadn't thought about that.
That is so great.
Worst thing in the world.
His one dream, yeah. He leaves early, doesn't get the ring. Strahan gets the ring and the gig.
And he's, you know, Strahan's the guy, like the cool kid that was smoking cigarettes outside CVS or whatever, not even like studying. And Barber had his whole life prepared for this. And then this is how it works out.
So true. Wow. Good point there. 92, any other thoughts
James
there?
James Harrison, your boy, right?
James Harrison. Yeah, right. How could I skip over?
Pure evil, but.
Jimmy Harrison. Still can't imagine how it's legal in the 21st century for him to embrace the nickname Silverback. Seems like that shouldn't be allowed.
We can't say that.
How about right. Michael Dean Perry?
Oh, yeah.
Dead Silent.
Was that a sitcom?
The Fridges. No, that was the Fridges' younger brother.
You said that, I thought of Jan Michael Vincent.
Michael Dean Perry was
a strong
was,
parallel.
I thought of MacGyver.
He went to Clemson, too, right?
Yes.
Just like the Fridges' younger
underrated
brother.
Underrated defensive lineman.
Yeah, not bad for those underrated.
Not in this class, though, that you're discussing.
Little forgotten Browns team. So, yeah, we give it to Reggie White there and the late, great Reggie White. Speaking of which, on a serious note, very sad to hear that Steve Sable passed away. And you know, listen, anybody who grew up when Rank and I grew up, and I think a generation past us too, but we were reared on NFL films. I mean, that's what you saw on ESPN all the time growing up, were those great things. And you know, and Inside the NFL in the days of Dawson and Boniconti, it was always those NFL films things. And John Facenda voicing it over, the words almost always written by Steve Sable himself. So let's go out today with Steve Sable, probably his best known. The Autumn Wind is a Raider. Is that what it's called? You know what it is, Black Tie. So please dig that one up. And, you know, again, to to Dan Hanzus, at Dan Hanzus, at Mark Sessler, NFL, at Fire Black Tie, at Adam Rank, at Damashek, or our Twitter accounts. We'll talk to you later in the week. We've lined up our pal, our colleague, Akbar Baja Biamila, to join us for a new segment we're calling Inside Out. We'll get to that later in the week. In the meantime, though, thanks so much to Patrick Willis, and thanks to you. We'll be back with more Huey and Applesauce later on, and a tip of the hat now to Steve Sable.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously. His face is weather-beaten. He wears a hooded sash with a silver hat about his head and a bristling black mustache. He growls as he storms the country, a villain big and bold, and the trees all shake and quiver and quake as he robs them of their gold. The autumn wind is a raider, pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered and won.